the team. Are we done for
Yes, we
now?
are done, Honorable Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
So,
Yes.
yeah, we'll come back to the last point. What I think, colleagues, can I ask your permission or your views? Instead of them going line by line, can't we just deal with the policy issues, questions we may have? Then we can look line by line. But to me, it seems to plunge line by line into the poll. Well, if you want to do that, it's fine. It may be better just to raise any questions we have now before we go to that. Or do you want them to deal with the bill? So who says what? Nobody's saying anything.
With that item,
Oh,
Chair.
Dennis. Yes, there's Dennis' hand up. Okay, now Dennis, go for it.
Yeah, thanks very much. Okay. Just clarity on the process. I presume we're still going to go through a public participation discussion, etc., on this. We're not doing the line by line through the court, through the bill as the final step towards putting a report together, are we?
When have we ever done that? When?
No, I'm just
Since
checking,
the...
because
No,
you're.
when have we ever done that?
No,
We've
your
never done
request
that.
was a little unclear, Chair, so I just
No,
wanted
my
to confirm.
request is about a briefing on the bill. This is a briefing. So you also get a briefing on the actual bill. First, you get a briefing on the concepts and policy issues. Then you get a briefing on the bill. Then, presumably, we're going to have public hearings next week. I have forgotten this program was done so long ago and haven't had time to look at it again. In Nkululeko, just come in here. When is the public hearings? Hello.
Hi, Chair, sorry. They were scheduled for the 19th next week. There is what is it? Provincial week.
So it's going to be the week after.
The week after that, the 19th, to be specific, Chair.
Okay, there it is, Dennis.
Thank you, Chair. No, then
Okay.
I'm in full support of your recommendation.
All right, then go for it. What have you to ask? You're looking very like white at the moment. Well, to my screen anyway. I can't speak. Anybody see a super white person at the
You
other
can
end?
call me
Even by the
Casper
standards of a
today,
white
Chair. No,
Southampton,
I
you
don't
look
have
a hell
my
of a
full
white.
camera with me. I'm relying on the laptop.
All right, okay.
Cool. Thank you, Treasury, for the presentation. Couple of things that I just want to clarify. So this appears to largely be around development charges, bulk contributions, called various different things in different places, and that raises quite a big alarm bell for me. Because there are many municipalities that have been raising these charges for quite some time. And as far as I'm concerned, well within their rights to have been doing so. Now, Spluma was introduced, and Spluma again, and I can't remember the clauses, I think it was 22 or 122, somewhere, I don't recall. But Spluma also gave further. Confirmation that municipalities can do this. I'm not sure that I see the need for this bill, and I think that perhaps we need to have that explained. Why do we need a bill to give a right that's been exercised for quite some time, and that another law has already been introduced to cover? So the municipality, I mean, the subordinate legislation to the Constitution. Be it the Structures Act, the Municipal Rates Act, and Spluma is another one. So they already have the right, as far as I'm concerned. I don't understand why we have the bill. That's number one. Before we get to that, I should have mentioned already that I have major concerns with the tagging of this bill. I note that it's been tagged as a Section 75 bill, and I realize that there's a process that we normally go through in terms of checking the tagging of bills. But noting the content of it, I really don't believe that this is a Section 75 bill. It really should be handled as a Section 76 with appropriate public participation at a much devolved level than what the National Assembly invariably does. And I haven't followed the bill through the National Assembly process, but I certainly will be looking at what they've done. Because yeah, I don't think I believe it's been appropriately tagged. In addition to which, I mean, I note the comment that in various different places that Treasury does not believe that traditional leaders needed to be consulted on this, so they didn't consult with traditional leaders on this. And I wonder if that's really accurate, because frankly, are we saying that none of these type of arrangements happen on traditional land, or are the traditional leaders happy that the municipality handles all of the issues relating to bulk infrastructure development on what's known as shared land or shared rights land, et cetera, et cetera? So I'm a little concerned with the tagging and with the process that we're following. And I'd like you just to convince me otherwise, if you possibly can. In terms of the development charges themselves, okay, so again, as I say, it's being done already. Why do we need the Act? Is this to try and standardize everything? Now, Spluma has come in to try and standardize a lot of things, but really that contravenes Section 151, 3 and 4 of the Constitution, which says that, you know, national government can't really go in and interfere with how local government does its work. Now, what this is doing is it's trying to force local government to standardize, to all be the same, to all look the same. And I think more and more, as you go out into the real world, outside of your offices in Pretoria, you will find that no two municipalities are the same. There are massive differences, and there's needs to differentiate between these things. I mean, certainly I understand some municipalities use development charges and they use them as incentives to develop or disincentives to develop, depending on their particular requirements at the time. Now, this bill, I believe, may have been a great idea if we had a total, what do they call it, greenfields or brownfields arrangement where there was no existing bulk infrastructure. And any new development would be reliant on developing new infrastructure. But, you know, in cases where municipalities have got surplus capacity, where municipalities have got, existing infrastructure that is being underutilized, they may want to incentivize. They don't need the capital outlay, and they may want to incentivize uptake of that capacity, to offering, you know, competitive discounts and advantages to potential developers. Does this bill seek to do away with the ability to do that? And I mean, there was an interesting comment from the presenter that said that, you know, municipalities are still able to decide whether they want to levy development charges or not. And that seemed to be contradicted in various other parts of the presentation where it was said, we're trying to standardize, we're trying to get all the same. So I am a little confused, and I believe I need some clarity on that. I'm glad you're going to be doing an audit of skills and capabilities, because realistically, I believe that there are probably less than 20 municipalities in this country that are able to effectively sit down and draft and negotiate engineering services agreements. And I think you're going to be horrified when you see the results of that skills audit. You may end up wanting to change this bill. So perhaps you should do the skills audit before you continue any further. Chair, yeah, I look forward to the inputs from the public participation. I certainly hope that we'll be getting a lot of input from SELGA and perhaps a couple of the individual municipalities as well, coming to give presentations from their perspectives, because I do know that, you know, a metro is not the same as a local. We often have one perspective delivered by SELGA, depending on which representative of SELGA happens to be at the meeting. And that position is not necessarily reflective of the entire SELGA. And it's also the same for different provinces of SELGA, where I do find that they often have disagreements, but the person presenting presents the view from their particular province. So hopefully we can extend that invitation not only to SELGA, but to some of the municipalities that have shown capabilities and interest in this regard as well. The last thing I'd like to say is that, you know, we do already have MIG, Municipal Infrastructure, RBIC, Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant, and various other grants. Those are the two for locals. I can't remember what the Metro one is called. But, you know, is this an acknowledgement that those are not working as well as they should? Or is there something else that's driving this particular issue? Those are my questions for now, Chair, and I look forward to learning a lot more over the next couple of weeks. Thank you.
Now, there's Simon and there's Fun.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, colleagues. Good afternoon, Treasury. Let me acknowledge the presentation. Chair, I will request to close my video because I'm on a 4-hour load shedding, so I might have a problem of a network.
Yeah, fine.
Thank you very much. To the presenters, in your presentation, you have mentioned that municipalities need to come forward about what assistance do they need for capacitation. And I want to believe that not all of them, the municipalities, will be bold enough to come forward to request assistance of being empowered to make sure that all municipalities are ready and well-equipped to implement this bill. And also noting that in your presentation, you have mentioned that this is not a new thing. It has been existing revenue. It is a matter of trying to formalize it and also trying to standardize it. It has not been, and also it has not been used effectively as treasury. As I've mentioned, that maybe not all the municipalities will come forward and be able to say, no, we need assistance. So as treasury, do you have any plan to support or equip the municipalities to have the capacity to implement this bill? Thank you, Chairperson.
Next, Fanny.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you for the presenters for the presentation. Yes, Chair, I've been partially covered. Just a few things. From my point of view, this bill is trying to basically supplement the work that the district municipalities is supposed to do with regards to the provision of bulk services and putting this huge responsibility on the developers that is supposed to contribute in that specific municipal area by developing the area. Now, we know that all the municipalities, or most of them, are in financial constraints or the financial dilemma at this stage. But I've got a concern with regards to the development charges. I mean, Honourable rightfully said that it is currently taking place, but it's not necessarily ring-fenced. And I mean, this bill allows for a gate to stand open, then that should a municipality not honor their part of the deal by putting bulk services or assuring that it is there, that the developer can be partially reimbursed. But at the end of the day, it's the developer that takes the risk to do the development. And with this door that's open for the municipality just to stand back and say, sorry, we couldn't do that. We're going to look at a partial reimbursement. That could also allow for the developer to have huge financial losses as a result thereof. I mean, it's common knowledge that district municipalities are failing the local municipalities at this stage by not providing bulk services. And I want to know what Treasury's view is with regards to district municipalities, because in most of the cases, it's basically just funding salaries of employees and directors and municipal managers and not effectively delivering a service and supporting the local municipalities. And if we can perhaps be provided with more information with regards to the parks and open spaces that's supposed to form part of that specific paragraph. Do I understand correctly that by implication, by including it in that paragraph, that it can be rezoned without following a parks closure process? Or if I can just be provided with more information with regards to that, please, Chair. Thank you.
Anybody else? Nope, I don't see anybody. Okay. Firstly, it's the same issue that Dennis raised. Why is it a 75 bill? Almost all bills are 76 that relate to local government. Secondly, what is SELGA's position on this bill? Were they consulted before the bill was brought to Parliament? Presumably it was gazetted for comment. And what was their overall take both there in response to Treasury's gazetting and also in the National Assembly Committee? Thirdly, my overall view for what it's worth is that why is it taking so long to come with a bill like this? To me, it seems it's overdue. And you know, to my colleagues here, I just want to say, you see, in different ways, we acknowledge, not least the ANC, that the model isn't working the way it should. And personally, I played a role as part of an excellent team, let me add, in shaping this model. And I have said publicly and in closed meetings that while I still hold by the view that the model is correct, its values are correct, we were too ambitious. And we had underestimated a plethora of issues. We could not have known most of them. In fact, I can tell you now, we spent hours and hours on this model. It emerges from a white paper that I think whose process lasted for a year and a half, if not more. No more, 1998 March was when the white paper was finished. And we were wrong in some respects and right in others. But the values that underlie it are correct. It's redistributive. It is funny, actually, for somebody who's been around for so long to see how the debates changed, where parties that had certain views in the period from 1998 to about 2000, and even later when we did other bills, up to, say, 2004, have now taken the opposite position to what they did then. But so be it. I think the bill is aimed correctly. I'm finding it far more difficult now that you made the presentation. I thought I understood the bill when I looked through it, but it's looking more complex. how many submissions were processed by the NA, do you know? In respect of Wendy's very good reply to why is this happening, I suppose one, as a chair, has a responsibility to draw attention to this. It's been happening fairly often now. There are quite understandable reasons, largely, for Treasury's need to bring this letter from the minister. But can we please ask, we know that you overworked and understaffed, and you're a very good department overall. In fact, I can't think of a better department than yours. Excuse me. But the truth is, between Parliament and yourselves, when I mean Parliament, I mean the officials in Parliament and yourselves. Because, you know, there's no obligation, I later learned, 10 years too later for a chair to go through every clause and check that the amendments were done, which is what I used to do from 98 till about 2004. And then I was told, no, that's not your job, actually. It's the legal services unit, if I'm right, Frank, and the ATC people and the department officials who's work it out, that they've done what Parliament requires. So we can discuss that some other time, maybe. For now, unless there's anybody else, can you reply to this before we ask you just brief us on the actual bill? I don't see any other hands in Kurileko.
No more hands, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. And thank you very much for those questions. I can see there's another hand. Oh, okay. So maybe I will allow the team to start with the response, and I hope MP can also comment on the Section 76-75 classification question that has been asked. And then I'll come back and round up. Thanks.
Hello, Chair. Before they come in, I see Advocate Jenkin has his hand up.
Oh, yeah, sure.
No, Chair, sorry, I'm here. So I wanted to address the question. When it's convenient, or if the committee allows me on the tagging.
No, go right ahead. No, it's fine. We always hearing you.
Yeah, Chair, we considered the classification of the bill, and it was not a simple provision, but how the classification works is that there's a test set down in the Constitution, by the Constitutional Court, which basically we call the substantial measure test. So we have schedules to the Constitution with what's called competencies of concurrent legislative competence. So it's a functional area of concurrent legislative competence between national and provincial government. So one looks at those competencies, and then from there one see whether the bill actually deals with these and regulates them. So what we did, we went and when we look at Schedule 4 in Part B, there's various areas there that deals with municipalities, and those are areas where national and provincial government can legislate national can only legislate into local government matters directly if there is an emergency. In other words, it needs to be done. But Schedule 4 Part B sets out certain areas like municipal planning, health services, municipal public transport. So the question was really, does this bill regulate these provisions, these functional areas municipal planning and so on? So we looked at that, and there's another court case, Chairperson, that actually deals with this question, which was held or decided in the High Court in Cape Town, which says that once we're looking at whether a bill in a substantial measure affects one of those competencies, one must remember that the test is for direct regulation. It's not for knock-on effect, because a bill will have knock-on effects. If we deal with in another committee with international maritime laws, it will have an effect on harbors, which is a local government matter. But that's not the function of that legislation, bringing in that international treaty. Much like in this area, the primary purpose of the bill is to amend the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act and to provide a regime for municipalities to levy development charges. What is also quite important is that provision has been there in other legislation, so it's not a new matter. And in our view, there was a knock-on, because we're dealing with the levying of those charges for development. Certainly there's a knock-on on areas like municipal planning, municipal public works, etc. Stormwater management is another one can think of, water and sanitation services and so on. But it's a knock-on effect. It's a side effect of the legislation. So this legislation doesn't deal with what it does, much like a financial bill does. It tries to set uniform practices around this specific area of development charges. And that is why we then said or advised the joint tagging mechanism, that this bill, in our view, does not directly affect and in a substantial measure those functional competencies in Schedule 4 and 5 of the Constitution. And insofar as we dealt with the referral to the National House of Traditional and Khoisan Leaders, again, there, first of all, it does not, we look specifically at the provisions in those acts And what is required to fall within those provisions is that there must be a direct effect on the traditional or Khoisan communities, or it must contain provisions pertaining to customary law or customs of traditional or Khoisan communities. In our view, this bill does not contain provisions that affect the traditional Khoisan communities, or that contains provisions that will affect the customary law customs of traditional Khoisan communities. By that, we don't say that certainly when a municipality takes decisions to develop and then levies a development charge, that the Khoisan communities or traditional communities can't be affected. But this bill doesn't fall within that category that at this point it needs to be referred to the National House of Traditional Khoisan Leaders. If a municipality takes certain decisions, certainly it will have to consult with the relevant traditional or Khoisan leaders, as well as other people there when a development takes place, as it's required in law. But that is our consideration of the question, and it was not an easy question. But that is where we are at this point in time, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, can we get other replies? We can come back to what you said, Frank, if anybody wants to. Excuse me, I'd go ahead, Majjeng, your team, please.
Advocate, MP Van Square, do you want to come in further to elaborate on the Section 75 issue?
Wendy, sorry, I can't. My video is not working. Yeah, I don't think the point is the Parliament, the view expressed by Treasury and that of the state law advisors that it's a 75 bill. And it was then for Parliament's joint tagging mechanism to decide whether that's correct or not. So I can't add anything to what Advocate Jenkins said. Thank you.
All right. Since we're there, I think maybe the way the conversation's panned out, maybe it's better to settle this issue because tagging is so crucial. So the one question I want to ask for the committee as a whole, meaning it's a matter that affects all of us, across party political divides, it's an empirical one. In the NA process, did people raise questions about the tagging? And if so, who did?
Thank you, Chairperson. Those issues were not raised by the National Assembly during our presentations, but my team can also come in because they attended more sessions than I did. But not as far.
But did anybody in the public hearings raise it? Did Salga, for example, raise it? And civil society stakeholders? Nobody. Excuse me? Wendy? You're muted, Wendy. Wendy?
No, Chairperson, they did not. During the public presentations, only Salga presented, and that is not something they raised during the
Oh, there's only one presentation. Now, Dennis, you're going on about the gravity of this bill and huge public hearings. It's a 75 bill, even. But fine. Let's see where it
Disappointed,
goes.
Chair, but I think the question presupposes an understanding of the NCOP, which doesn't exist, sadly, amongst many of our colleagues.
No, you see what? I would have thought, I mean, really, realistically, you guys have one caucus, okay? Like all parties do, whether you're in the NA, then you will discuss the bill in your caucus. And at that stage, you would make an input, whether you're from NA or NCOP, and particularly if it's a 75 bill. And presumably, you made your inputs that, hey, this bill is problematic tagging-wise. Presumably, then your colleague there or colleagues from the NA side would take it up. That's all I'm saying. Because, I mean, nobody raises it, not even Selga, which normally fights all the time. I don't know what they do now, Wendy, but in my era when I was on the NA side, from 1998 to 2004, they were constantly telling us, comrades though they were of ours, we knew some of them personally in those days, oh, no, you're going too far and so on. So I don't know what Selga's like now, but the fact that they haven't raised it is quite an important signal to me at least. But hey, people are entitled to their views. And I'm just a bit surprised there was only one submission, and that too from a statutory body. Okay, well, there it is. Go ahead with the other issues, please.
Thank you so much, and I'll ask my team.
Unless somebody wants to challenge the tagging, but I don't see any hands up, so I'm just, you know, we don't want to come back to this. I'm fine with the answers that all of you have given. And so for me, I don't have an issue. I don't see any other hand up, but fine, let's move on.
Just I'm not going to pursue the matter, but I do disagree with Advocate Jenkins' take, but perhaps him and I can agree offline to a small wager on the chance that someone takes this to the Constitutional Court. But I've heard these answers noted. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Well, that's their right. They must do that. How? What are we going to do? Ensure that the judge is appointed is a former member of the Communist Party, so that he will take the instructions from the Politburo. No, that's not going to happen. Okay. So, okay, the court will decide. That's the ultimate arbiter. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for the questions. And we'll try to answer it to the best of our abilities. And my team will also come in to assist on specific questions. A very key question was asked, why do we regulate? Why is this necessary? That the municipalities do legally have the right to levy development charges. There's specific reference made in Spluma towards that and the like. The issue is, that is 100% correct. It is currently regulated. It is referenced in Spluma that development charges may be levied, but it does not put any norms and standards in place. There's currently provincial ordinances that regulate development charges, and that is where the problem comes in. As we know, provincial ordinances, we did not always have wall-to-wall municipalities. So what will happen, some of the provincial ordinances will cover parts of municipalities, but not all municipalities or all regions, areas that's covered by municipalities. So not all municipalities are currently subject to the provincial ordinances. And then also the various provincial ordinances deal with development charges in a very different way. So what you get in terms of regulation in one municipality, in one province, will very much differ from what is a practice in another municipality in another province. And what that has resulted in is a lot of developers are currently taking municipalities to court in terms of development charges. And because of these legal uncertainties of it being regulated in various places, and the regulations are very different, it is causing problems for municipalities to levy development charges. So what we've actually picked up, although it is a revenue source for municipalities, a number of municipalities are actually a bit reluctant to levy it at this stage because they get then enshrined in battles with developers in this regard, which is quite problematic. So what this legislation is trying to do is not to over-regulate development charges. The flexibility is still in place with the municipalities. It is just to put standard practice in place so that there's some uniformity and that developers feeling that they paying their fair charge, and municipalities are also feeling that they can optimize this revenue source. So this whole piece of legislation amendment has been put in place to make it a win-win situation, both for municipalities and for the developers. And we had substantial consultation with all the stakeholders involved in the process. We've had discussions with SALGO, we've had discussions with metros, we had discussions with developer associations and the like. We've had numerous public consultations. And throughout that process, we learned a lot, and we really tried to put in place a fair system that both for the municipalities and the developers in place. So it's really not meant to over-regulate an existing revenue source. It's similar to, for example, the Municipal Property Rights Act, where the whole intention is to put in place norms and standards. It is not, but the right still vests with the municipality to levy property rights. The reason why there's reference made to May A municipality, there's a number of municipalities in the country, and some municipalities will opt to levy development charges, other municipalities will opt not to levy development charges. The same, by the way, applies to property rates. A municipality may opt to levy development property rates or not levy property rates. Of course, we know that they will forfeit a huge revenue source if they don't do that. So it's either way the constitution is written. But if a municipality opts to levy development charges, it cannot then decide, I will levy development charges on certain developers in certain areas of the municipality, but I will omit to do it in other areas of the municipality on other developers. So in that way, you will create a very unfair playing field. And so if a municipality decides to levy development charges, it then makes the whole municipal area subject to development charges. And only in terms of municipal policy may certain rebates and exemptions then be provided. And to give a good example of exemption is, we do know that bulk is not just going to, say, a business area or rich households. It also goes to, bulk will benefit, areas that cross, various areas in a municipality. So it can have areas that's social in nature, and it will have also areas that's commercial in nature. So what you would want to do is, it's not replacing MEG. It is actually, for example, the municipal infrastructure grant for smaller municipalities, the urban settlements development grant where it comes to metros, for example, is supposed then to cover the social part of that bulk, and not then to levy development charges on the social side of that development. And that what a municipality will then exempt from development charges. In other cases, there could be some social benefits or other economic benefits. And in terms of the municipal policy, it's flexible. It's the municipal policy. It's not nationally prescribed. Will determine where can rebates be provided. So there's still opportunities for that as well. So if a municipality wants to push certain developments and then levy lesser development charges, it's still able to do that. So this is really not infringing or supposed to infringe in the rights of municipalities. It's really to improve the regulatory field and ensure that the current process that's very badly regulated, that there's a more streamlined and better place put in place in this regard. So Spluma just refers to development charges, like I've indicated. It does not go into detail on putting in place a uniform system. Then with regard to underutilized infrastructure and a municipality still wanting to push for that, I think I've already responded to that in my previous response, in terms of a municipality then covering it in its policy that will ultimately find expression in its bylaw. Then with regard to the skills and the skills process and how we've measured the skills process in terms of municipalities and how they can contribute, can I ask Matweni and Sandra to come in here? But also important to that, that is just one initiative that we've put in place, and that we're doing it while the bill is being processed. So before the bill comes in process, that we've got a very good idea of the skills that is in place, but also we can indicate what we will do once the bill is in place to upskill municipalities in that regard. Then with regard to the question about district municipalities basically not giving the support to local municipalities in terms of bulk, the system is slightly differently designed because if you refer to, for example, water and sanitation, either a district municipality is authorized to provide water and sanitation, or a local municipality is authorized to provide water and sanitation. So it won't be that a district municipality and a local municipality is jointly authorized to provide water and sanitation in the same municipal area. And what is currently happening and what makes it so complicated is that that is not nearly decently implemented as it should. So if you look at, for example, conditional grant money and the equitable share, it goes to the municipality that's authorized for water and sanitation and electricity and refuse removal. It does not go to the municipality that's necessary providing the service. So in terms of the Municipal Structures Act, that is regulated. So it's very clear who's responsible for water and sanitation. And that includes the bulk component as well as the reticulation or distribution component. So it's not that the district is responsible for the bulk and the local is responsible for retail. That responsibility is either with the district municipality or the local municipality. Although what we've currently find in practice, when the legislation was changed, what happened in certain cases, the district municipality was authorized in terms of the Structures Act, but in terms of very old past practice, the local municipality then did the reticulation, and the assets were never, and the staff and that form of transfer of that responsibility was never done to the district municipality. So it's currently a bit of a messy situation where you do get in terms of practice that both the district municipality and the local municipality are providing water and sanitation. But when a district municipality, for example, is authorized to provide water and sanitation, and the local municipality also provides water and sanitation, the reality is there should be a service level agreement and a funding agreement in place to regulate that. And that, unfortunately, is not always the case. In terms of development charges, it will be linked to the municipality that's authorized for that service. So, for example, if the local municipality is not authorized to provide water and sanitation, it won't be able to levy a development charge. If the district municipality is then authorized, it will be able to levy a development charge. So it is something that is important. There's a definitely, in terms of legislation, there's a separation between those two responsibilities. Reference was also made to the fact that, currently municipalities levy development charges, but it's not ring fence in the books. And if I can ask Matweni also to come in on that one, and exactly how we're going to deal with that issue also in regulations and guidelines. And it's very important. And Matweni, can I also ask you to come in on the more detail in terms of the parks and open spaces? I think after that, we've most probably dealt with everything. Maybe what is, in terms of the public consultation, and I know it's not my business or National Treasury's business, but it will definitely be a very good idea to not just invite SALGO and also municipalities, but something else that can also be considered is to invite, maybe some of the developers institutions as well, because they've got a definite role to play. That will include that a comprehensive public consultation process takes place. But Matweni and Sandra, over to you, please.
Just to alert you, the public hearings are done as normal. We invite all the stakeholders and we publicize it. So I don't know what more we can do. And much of this should have been done on the ANA side, because after all, it's a 75 bill. Did you raise that with the NA? Wendy?
No, Jefferson, I did not.
Unfortunate, but fine. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I will answer the question around the capacity needs. Mr. Moletsane indicated that not all municipalities will come forward to request for assistance, and that is true.
The norm in Parliament, I'm not into all of this, right, but I have to abide by the norms here. I don't really care, but, it's not me. I'm just a small cog here. They want, for whatever reasons, I think requests broadcasting and YouTube reasons and whatever else, for people who are speaking to be videoed as well, unless there are conditions that rule it out. So unless you have connectivity issues, can you put your video on, please? Hello?
Yes, Chair. I will do that.
Yeah. But if you're having connectivity issues, you know, I don't really care. I just think what matters is what a person says, okay? But this is not me. I abide by a lot of rules I personally don't agree with. But hey, this is Parliament, and I'm one out of thousands of chairs here. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So I was saying that Mr. Muletsane indicated that not all municipalities will come forward and request assistance in terms of the capacity needs within their areas. And that is true. Earlier this year in March, we held a pre-capacity assessment workshop where we invited all municipalities so that we can explain the purpose of this project, the capacity assessment project, and also to indicate how we are going to be undertaking the capacity assessment. And we had good representation, but other municipalities from other provinces didn't pitch. But that didn't derail us, given that we are also going to be developing pro forma DC policies, pro forma bylaws, and issuing the regulations, and also developing a DC calculator to assist municipalities to implement development charges. And over and above that, Chair, we've been doing some work where municipalities that wants to impose development charges, but they do not have policies in place, we were assisting them to come up with policies. Those that wanted to amend their policies, we also provided inputs and comments in those policies that they wanted to develop for living development charges. So we've been quite hands-on in terms of assisting municipalities to address their capacity needs. And we will also be holding provincial trainings throughout the country, where all the categories of municipalities will be invited so that we train them on the various tools that we have developed so far, including the implementation guidelines. So we will train them on how to use those tools that we have developed. So just to indicate that we are really working very hard to ensure that our municipalities are well capacitated to implement development charges. And then on the question around the reimbursement, we have put in a provision in the bill where we indicated that development charge should be used for the purpose for which it has been collected, and that is for the provision of infrastructure. So municipalities are not allowed to use development charges for any other purpose except for the provision of infrastructure. So they cannot use it to pay the salaries within their municipality. They cannot even use it for other municipal administrative functions. So it is only meant to be used for funding infrastructure. And with regard to the parks and open spaces, Chair, we are aware that PLUMA Section 50 already indicates that where a land development application provides for the use of land for residential purpose, then such a land application should be subjected to land for cost. Should be subjected to the cost of land for the provision of parks and open spaces. And it is for the responsibility of the applicant. So in our bill, we're just linking it to that specific section to say that municipalities are also allowed to use development charges to contribute towards the cost of land for the provision of parks and open spaces. Then the applicant has to pay for that as well. Because the reason why there is a need to have that parks and open spaces, it's basically because of the proposed land development that they want to develop within the municipal area. Yeah. So there was another question from Mr. Jenkins around why does the bill regulate functions or not regulate the functions, functional area around municipal planning? And the reason why our bill is not regulating the municipal planning is because our bill is purely meant to regulate the financial aspects of municipalities and not the planning part. The planning or municipal planning is being regulated through SPLUMA. So we also had engagements with SPLUMA following our deputy director engagement, the clusters, where we were requested to sit with the Department of Rural Development to agree in terms of which ministry is responsible for regulating development charges. Should it be the Minister of Finance through the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act, or should it be the Minister of Rural Development through SPLUMA? And we sat with the colleagues from rural development, and we agreed that given that development charges is a financial tool, it should be regulated within the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act and leave the planning to SPLUMA. So I think I've covered what I needed to cover. If there is something that I've missed, then Sandra can assist. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Sandra. Anything to add from your side before we hand back to the DDG?
Nothing from my side, Wendy. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe just a question on why did we take so long and why did we not process it when all the other municipal legislation was processed? It's basically something that came up afterwards, and it was basically from a big request from the metros, actually, that we put in place this type of regulation. That is why it's been put in place. Thank you, DDG. Back to you.
No, that wasn't so much the question. Sorry, just 1 second. Why? You know, look, I was there, as you might know, Wendy. And excuse me, I also had some hands playing another role in the integrated urban development framework, right? So I'm not saying it should have been done when the first tranche of local government bills came. It's that we've been discussing this intermittently. And you know, I'm surprised it's taken so long now that it's here. That's all I'm saying. It's not a criticism of you, can I repeat? You're an excellent team. It's the politicians, us, COGTA committee, ourselves, and the two ministers and DGs concerned. Ultimately, well, the two ministers, really. So, you know, I understand. Okay, fine.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, team, for the responses. We definitely wish it could have been processed much earlier, because the research and the work that we did was actually done quite a while ago. But obviously, it's the processes that we had to follow and comply with. So what I wanted to add with regard to the responses is regard to the value that this development charges actually brings into the system because of the requirements to be transparent and account for what development needs in terms of the bulk, irrespective of who they actually serve. So even those developments that serve the poor, for which development charges cannot be charged, that needs to be accounted for transparently and costed, and the indication of who pays. And I think this is where the conditional grants come in, because they come in to support developments that benefit the poor or that enables the inclusion of the poor in some of this commercial developments, so that subsidization becomes also transparent as a mechanism also for inclusionary developments. But I think the whole issue of transparency and ensuring that developments don't just occur just because maybe another sphere of government wants to develop some developments far away from the city and they cannot be paid for. So somebody has got to pay. That I think is very, very important, because it avoids this problem whereby developments can happen and then we haven't actually thought out about the bulk infrastructure. And also to ensure that the conditional grants are actually targeted for the developments of investments that will include the poor, that will support the poor. So better targeting of the conditional grants. So even if municipality wants to exempt some, for some reason, maybe to incentivize developments, that becomes transparent, because you do need to be able to say how then you are going to pay for that development. And that should be actually well-timed to ensure that the investments can support, the bulk can support the investment that, that actually is required. So I think that that's just the points that I wanted to add to all those elaborate answers that the team has given, Chair. Thank you. Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
Mary Jane, what's up? Hello?
I believe we're done.
I don't know if I went off, because in my thing, I finished.
I went off, sorry.
Okay.
So I apologize for that. Look, I want to throw this back to the committee members. When we process a bill, more and more thoughts come to your mind, right? And especially after you get public hearings, if the public hearings are substantial enough. So I just want to say I'm very surprised that only one stakeholder took part in the public hearings. It doesn't help us, because sometimes I browse through what was said when I have space and time in the National Assembly, because it doesn't follow if they rejected what a stakeholder has done that we can't accept what they've done, because we have a slightly different perspective. I would imagine quite a different perspective. We look at things differently. Otherwise, we'll just be another NA Mark II. So unless there's members coming up, there will be more policy issues that will arise as we finish processing the bill. So I would suggest we move on now to looking at the bill. It's 11 pages, colleagues, and Kululeko sent it to you. So, right, can we go ahead then? I don't see any hands up objecting, so can we start? So the first section is on the definitions and interpretations with the technical amendments that were proposed by Treasury in the minister's letter addressing that. So go ahead, please. So who's going to take us through the bill? Hello? There we are. Oh, I don't hear anything much. Is it just me, or is it gone silent again?
Oh, it's very quiet. Very, very quiet.
Oh, this is a bit confusing, yeah, because this thing is cutting off. So I don't know whether it's me or who. Okay, so who's taking us to the bill? You still don't know. Treasury?
Chairperson, when Matweni presented, we went through clause by clause. So we've already done that, but maybe if we can just scroll to show the, where it is actually in the legislation. So if I can ask Matweni, if you can just...
Well, you know why? Because people, if they're making proposals, we're amending clause 14 and so on. So we're not familiar with the bill. We're familiar with your overview. So if you can quickly take us through that. So we can skip the definition, quite frankly, I think I didn't look at the bill, right? I looked at your overview and I browsed through the bill, but you know, that's my issue. I just didn't have the time. I would prefer that, well, not because of me, let me go by the guidance of the committee. I would, you know, the normal procedure, as I remember it most times, not always, depending on what's on our agenda at the time. But we normally do have you take us through the bill. It just assists us when we have the hearings. Anybody object to that?
Certainly, Chairperson.
All right, Wendy, go for it. Now, I know the issues have been covered because your policy issues, obviously, I expressed in words in a bill, right? Ultimately, it's the bill we vote on. So can we go ahead? We obviously, Wendy, you know us well enough now. You've been here thousands of years, Wendy. What we will do is we'll have the hearings. And after that, we will look at the policy issues. Then we'll vote on the bill. Then we will vote on the report. Then we go to the House. And then we have to fight with them to say when we're going to put it on the agenda, as Dick Lady has to do with her bills, like a committee's bills, which is our committee as well. Right, go ahead, Wendy. Let's not waste time now.
Certainly, Chairperson, and maybe to make it clear, this bill does not just deal with development charges. It deals with a number of other issues that is not regulated in other pieces of legislation. This is an old piece of legislation, and it's been in place for quite a while. So what the actual original bill deals with is things like applications for new development from new municipal taxes, and it also allows for the regulation of surcharges. So what we're adding is a new section that deals with development charges. So this has been put in place in addition to what is in the current legislation. And I'll ask Matweni to quickly take us through. So most of this is just total new additions. But Matweni, can I ask you to take us through, please?
Thanks, Wendy. So I will start with the definitions. So the definitions that we are introducing talks to the bulk engineering service, and we are also proposing additional definitions through PLUMA. So if you can look at the definition there for bulk engineering service, it says means a bulk engineering service as defined in section one of PLUMA. So we are proposing an additional definition in section one of PLUMA. And then with regard to the applicant, we took the same definition as is in PLUMA as well. Then the capital infrastructure assets there, we just meaning the land, property, building, or any other immovable assets, including plant and equipment that are seen there too, which is required for the provision of engineering service. Constitution has always been in the original act. Can we scroll downwards? Then the definition of development charges there, we're just indicating that it is a charge levied by municipality in terms of section 9A1 and contemplated in section 49 of PLUMA. And section 49 of PLUMA is just giving the municipality the power to impose certain conditions when approving land development applications. And one of those conditions is the payment of development charges. So we are saying that development charges must contribute towards the cost of capital infrastructure assets required to meet increased demand for existing and planned external engineering services. And should I also talk to the technical changes that we are making? Because
that you've covered, it's now gonna get pretty repetitive. Yeah, we got that, thank you.
Okay, yes. So it can also be, so over and above A, then development charges must also be used to contribute towards the cost of land for parks and open spaces, especially where land development application provides for the use of land for residential purposes. And number C, then development charges.
Before we go to C, this is where one of the changes are being proposed, Chairperson. It says here cost of open parks and spaces, and this is one of the changes that we're proposing, that it be changed to parks and open spaces. So maybe what's important is to also to highlight where these changes proposed, Matweni. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, so be there, then we'll be referring to the cost of land for parks and open spaces, just to ensure that even the terminology is aligned with the terminology used in Spluma. Then C, development charges will contribute to the cost of both A and B, and with the approval of the minister, then other municipal services that have been outlined in the constitution under part B's of Schedule A, Schedule 4, and Schedule 5. And then engineering services there is the same definition outlined in Spluma. So it relates to the system for the provision of services such as water, electricity, sewage removal, so on and so forth, in Section 1 of Spluma. And we included a definition for engineering services agreement, which means a written agreement concluded between the municipality and an applicant on which a land development applicant has been brought in terms of Section 45 of Spluma, recording their detailed and specific respective rights and obligations regarding the provision and the provision and installation of external engineering services and internal engineering services required for an approved land development and matters auxiliary there too. Then we have the definition for engineering service zone. Can you please scroll upward? Thank you. Then with regard to the engineering service zone, it just means for engineering services, the area within a municipal boundary, which is served by a geographically or technically distinct network of capital infrastructure assets as determined in accordance with Section 9B2E, subsection I. Then the external engineering service, as we are saying, as outlined in Spluma, there's already a definition for external engineering service in Spluma. And also the definition for internal engineering service is similar to the one in Spluma. Then land development, the same as in Spluma, land development application, also similar to the one in Spluma. Land use has already been defined in Section 1 of Spluma. Then we are proposing additional definitions.
We get it. You know, that's straightforward. It's more when you have got, you know, something beyond just corresponding with Spluma, right? It saves the time. Okay. Thank you.
Then the link engineering service, that is an additional definition that we are introducing in Spluma, just to clearly indicate that the external engineering service is made up of both the bulk as well as the link engineering service. Scroll upwards. The rest of the definition have been outlined in the original act. Scroll upwards. Okay. Everything else has been outlined either in the original act or in Spluma, except for the last one, the unit impact, which means the average demand that a land use or mix of land uses is expected to have on an engineering service. Then, let's scroll upwards. Okay. Then under section 2 there, we've added subsection C there, where we indicated that section 2 of the principal act is hereby amended by the addition of the following paragraph. Paragraph E, provide for development charges and matters connected therewith. So we just added that. Then you can scroll up. Thank you. Then here we added subsection B under section 3, that chapter 2 and 3 do not apply to development charges. So those chapters deal with the surcharges and the introduction of new taxes by municipalities. You can scroll upwards. Okay. Then clause 9A, that's where I've indicated that it relates to the power to levy development charge. So we just indicated that a municipality may levy development charge, and if it does so, then it needs to comply with the provisions of the legislation by where the municipal council will be expected to adopt a resolution for the municipality to levy development charges. And also just indicating that the power that the municipality has to levy development charges is subject to section 229 of the constitution and this act, as well as the policy on development charges adopted in terms of section 9B. Then three there, we just indicated, remember the question about the reinforcing of development charges. So we indicated the development charges collected by a municipality must be used for the purpose of funding or acquiring capital infrastructure assets in a timely and sufficient manner and to support current and projected land development in the municipal area. So I'm just going to look for key issues that I can just indicate, because there are a lot of provisions. Okay, yeah, scroll upwards. Okay, then clause 9B, that is the adoption or and the contents of policy on development charges. So I've already indicated that a municipality that wants to levy development charges need to adopt a policy on development charges, and the policy has to be consistent with this act on levy development charges. And we are further indicating that such a development charges policy must treat the applicants liable for DC equitably and fairly, and there shouldn't be no duplication of cost, and it must also set out the methodology for calculation of unit cost per engineering service. And please scroll up. D there is saying that the policy on development charges should also set out standard unit impacts for engineering services in respect of each land unit or category of land uses that are applied in the municipal land use scheme. And D, the GC policy has also to determine the criteria to be applied by a municipality when calculating development charges with reference to engineering service zones, and also when they are granting reductions or exemptions from the payment of development charges. And okay, yeah, we can scroll upwards. And clause 9C, there's just about the community participation processes. The key there is that before a municipality adopts a DC policy on development charges, then it must follow a process of community participation process in order to allow the members of the community to provide their views and their comments, and those should be taken into consideration before the policy can be adopted. You can scroll upwards. Then clause 9D deals with the bylaw to give effect to the policy on development charges, and such a bylaw must be adopted by a municipal council and also published in terms of section 12 and 13 of the Municipal Systems Act. And the bylaw may also differentiate between engineering services, category of applicants, as well as category of land developments. Then clause 9E, which relates to the rebates and exemptions, we are allowing municipalities to grant rebates and exemptions. But if they need to do that, then they need to set out a criteria in terms of how they are going to provide those rebates and exemption. But the key there is that if they are to provide or grant a rebate or exemption, they need to identify an alternative revenue source to provide the required infrastructure. You can scroll upwards. Then Section 9F, which deals with the engineering services agreement. So we are saying that both parties, the municipality and the applicant, need to enter into a written engineering services agreement and also clarify who is going to be installing which infrastructure. In this instance, the internal engineering service will be the responsibility of the applicant, and the external engineering services will be the responsibility of the municipality. And then they also need to indicate what kind of infrastructure will be installed, as well as the timing in terms of when they're going to install it and when it is expected to be completed, and also including the cost that the applicant has to pay for the installation of the required infrastructure, and also include the dispute resolutions in case each one of the party defaults from the terms of the engineering service agreement. And another key issue there is that this engineering service should also set out the standards that that both the municipality and the applicant has to comply with when they are installing their either internal engineering service or the external engineering service. Please scroll upwards. Then clause 9G deals with the installation of external engineering services by an applicant. I've indicated that development charges can be paid either in monetary terms or in kind, where an applicant installs infrastructure on behalf of the municipality. And if the applicant has installed infrastructure on behalf of the municipality, then the municipality will offset the cost of installation of such infrastructure against the associated development charge. And also that the municipality may agree with the applicant that the applicant installs infrastructure of a greater capacity than what his or her development requires. And then the municipality will be required to reimburse the applicant the excess amount. Please scroll upwards. Thank you. Then clause 9H, which relates to a failure by the municipality to provide the required bulk engineering services. So we're saying that if the municipalities was unable to provide the required bulk engineering services, then the municipality will be expected to reimburse the applicant the portion of the development charges, and also an interest applicable at a rate that has been determined in terms of Section 80, Subsection 1A of the PFMA. And we also allowing both the municipality and the applicant to agree on the extension of the timelines in terms of the completion of bulk services in instances where there are circumstances which are outside the municipality's control that might affect the completion of the installation of infrastructure. Then clause 9I relates to the bulk and link engineering services as part of internal engineering services. So here we're just indicating that in instances where you find that a bulk or a link is within the boundaries of a land development area, then those bulk or link engineering services should be considered as external engineering services, so that the applicants will be liable for their cost. And clause 9J relates to the dispute resolution. So if any person feels that their rights have been affected by a decision to levy development charges, then such a person may appeal against that decision in terms of Section 62 of the Municipal Systems Act. But if there is a dispute in terms of any other matter that has been regulated within the engineering services agreement, then it must be resolved in terms of the dispute resolution mechanisms provided for in that agreement. Then Section 9K deals with the delegation. So the key there is that any power or duty related to development charges can be delegated to an official within the municipality, but the power to adopt a DC policy as well as a bylaw remains the responsibility of the municipal council and cannot be delegated. Please scroll upwards. Then with regard to Section 9L, which deals with the financial misconduct. We're just saying that if an official of a municipality has willfully or negligently contravened any provisions of this act, then such person will be, for a lack of a better word, dealt with in terms of Section 171 of the Municipal Finance Management Act. Then, please scroll up, thank you. Then Section 5 there, under the amendment of Section 10 of the original Act, there we are just saying that Section 10 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the insertion in subsection 1 after paragraph B of the following paragraphs. We were talking about the method or methods for calculating development charges, the information to be submitted by an applicant to a municipality when applying for a rebate or exemption, the requirements for municipal accounting, financial reporting in relation to development charges, matters relating to the installation of external engineering services by an applicant instead of paying development charges in cash, then a module engineering services agreement for the use by a municipality in the implementation of Chapter 3A. And Section 6 deals with the amendment of legislation and transitional provision. So there we're just indicating that a municipality which levies development charges in terms of pre-existing policy or bylaw as at the date of the commencement of this act must ensure that it complies with the act within a period of 36 months after the date of commencement of this act. Then Section 7 deals with the substitution of long title. I won't go through that one. And Section 8. Please scroll up, thank you. Section 8 deals with the amendment of arrangements of sections of Act 12 of 2007 and we've inserted Chapter 3A within the original Act, which deals with development charges. I went through the various sections. We can scroll upwards. And the short title and commencement, this Act is called the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act.
And, yeah, we know all that. That's quite clear. Yeah, we just want to look at the policy that's implied in the particular clauses. Now, the schedules, I don't think we need to go through. The members want to go through the schedules at this stage until we're more familiar with the bill. I don't see any hands up. Yeah, Mr. Fani Jitoy.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think let's get familiar with the bill and we can
Because you know what, to be fair, it'll just
appreciate the effort that Treasury is going through trying to explain this.
It's not going to work, you know why, because then we're just going through it normally and feeling good about it, but it's not going to take us anywhere. I saw something on the chat group now. What does it say? Please put her in the waiting room until, who are you referring to here?
That was very much earlier, Chair, when we were getting regular interruptions from one of the members.
Oh, right. Okay. There are two submissions made for this bill. From who? Who is that? Direct manager.
Select. That was me, Chairperson.
Sorry?
That was me writing to you, Chairperson.
Oh, we received two submissions so far.
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. Who are they from?
From City of Cape Town. And the second one was MFM.
Who's that?
Just a second, Chair. Let me get their correct name. It's Free Market Foundation.
Yeah, pretty predictable. All right, fine. Okay, it's just that I don't know why these people don't go. There's no point, Dennis. Get your lawyers to speak to the lawyers of Parliament. I don't see why these people don't go to the NA. And then they come here, presumably somebody lobbies them or something. They suddenly wake up now. Now, there's no problem in them coming to us. We can refer the stuff where we agree with them back to the NA, right? 75 bill. And I accept the rationale for the 75 bill, but I'm not a lawyer. Somebody can go to court and so on. So, you know, I don't know why the mobilization such as it is doesn't take place on that side, because it gets embarrassing, really. We sit here with people who don't go to the NA and come to the NCOP. Why? It's a common theme that's very unusual in all the years I've been here. where people have a strong view, they go to the NA, particularly if it's a 75 bill. And secondly, they go to the NCOP where they lost out, but they lost out in the NA, and there's no harm in that, but they've gone to the major committee. It's really something that's a very new phenomenon. I haven't come across it, not in the last term with De Beer. I don't know what's going on here, but we're not going to be manipulated by anybody. The first question they're going to be asked by the chair, it's my right to ask that question, why didn't you go to the NA? But fine, let's have them. Thank you for that. You know what? I don't want to debate about this. I've expressed my point of view. There are people who disagree with me, and you know, it's fine. Let's agree to disagree. But we will process their submissions. All I'm saying is, I know for a fact that on one occasion last year, was the year before, I even found out what was happening. Suddenly there was a splurge of, I think 13 or 15 came to us. They were all coming from the same source, basically, or the same pool. That's their right. But in a 75 bill, I have no power as a chair to undo what the Constitution says. We can hear them. We can only do what we can do is write a report to Parliament on our side and say refer the matters to them. For now, that's it. Can we have a follow-up when we at the public hearings? And National Treasury, just to remind you, we actually like you to do an initial reply to what people are saying at the public hearings. Okay, thank you very much. Bye then.
Thank you, Chair. Bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Chair. Goodbye, colleagues, members.